This is HDR episode 2362 entitled Raspbian X86 on Lenovo X61. It is hosted by Tony Kumak at Tony H1212 and is about 11 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, this is another distro review show.
This episode of HBR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HBR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, ACCA Public Radio listeners. This is Tony Hughes from Blackpool in the UK, giving you another show, and this time it's about running Raspbian X86 on the Lenovo X61S that I did a review of with different OSs a couple of weeks ago, or a couple of months ago, probably now. As these laptops don't have a DVD drive, normally I would create a boot flash drive using USB image writer in Linux Mint, but I'd received a DVD of Raspbian with the Magpie magazine, which is the Raspberry Pi magazine. So I connected a portable USB DVD drive that I had and used the disk to install to the laptop. On booting to the DVD drive, you get several options, including a live session with persistence, which allows saving of data and system changes to a flash drive during the session if you're using a live session if you want to. But the option I chose was to do a complete install to the hard drive. This gives a simplified Debian installer. And for new users with no previous experience of installing Linux, it recommends one of the options at each stage. The only issue I had with the installer was at the stage where it asks to install Grub, it does not automatically highlight the main drive, the SDA, as the default recommendation. Small gripe, but it could confuse a newcomer if they've never had any experience of installing an operating system before. That said, the install went flawlessly, and upon first boot I was left with the Pixel desktop with the taskbar at the top of the screen and a shortcut for the recycle bin on the desktop. Boot time on the laptop with a Core 2 Duo, 4GB of RAM and 120GB SSD was about 30 seconds, which is good. Also, it was only using 87 megabyte of the available RAM on startup, which gives an indication of the credentials of an OS built specifically to run and be backwards compatible with the original 256 megabyte Pi, which is good that the Raspberry Pi Foundation is still supporting, you know, hardware that's now 4 or 5 years old, but it does mean that if you've still got a 256 megabyte Pi stuck in a cupboard somewhere, it's not defunct, you can still use it. First job I did was to navigate to Raspberry Pi config from the menu bar. You open the menu, look at preferences, Raspberry Pi config, and press that and it opens up, and on the first page of that you get the option to change the password, which, considering every single Raspberry Pi install of Raspbian starts with the password of Raspberry, you want to change that fairly quickly, just to stop anyone else messing about with your system, really. It won't allow you to choose a weak password, you've got to choose something reasonably good. So I duly changed the password. Partly because my memory is terrible and my spelling's even worse. So if I use something that I know what I've spelt, how I've spelt it, and pretty good chance that I'll remember it. After this, I connected the laptop to my Wi-Fi network, which this happened flawlessly. It recognised that the network was there. I picked my particular SSID and put in the password, and it connected. I've got an Intel Wi-Fi card in the X61S. I can't comment on how easy or difficult this would be with a piece of equipment with another make of Wi-Fi card. Maybe someone else could share their experience of connecting Raspberry into the to Wi-Fi on their network if they're not running Intel. The next task, I ran a couple of terminal commands to update the system, sudo apt update and sudo apt upgrade, and updated all the packages to get security fixes and any package updates that were available. There's one little bug in the system I'm not quite happy with, I think maybe. I know why it's there, because it makes it easier for new users who've got no experience with Linux. It makes it easier for them to be able to update things and not worry about passwords and stuff. But sudo runs by default without having to put a password in. Can be fixed, and there's a link in the show notes to a page that shows you how to do that, but I'm not going to go into that here. But if you're not using the system for anything that you're security conscious with and you're just playing around with it, don't worry about it. It's not a major issue. But if you're going to use it as a SSH, you know, to SSH into the machine and stuff like that, then maybe you want to think about changing that so that it can only work with sudo after a password's been put in. So after completing the upgrades, I also added Synaptic Package Manager to the install. Partly because even though you can use the terminal for adding software and stuff, you don't always know the exact package name or whatever that you want to install. And if you're just hunting for audios, you know, something to do with audio, Synaptic will give you a little rundown on what various bits of software are, so you can go and have a look and decide what you want to install. So I installed Synaptic through the terminal, and after you've installed it, it appears in the preference menu as a link to open it up. Now that does require the password to start it up for some reason. Terminal doesn't, but Synaptic does. So there's one for you. One thing that didn't work out of the box was audio. I had to install some ALSA packages and Audacity to collect the needed dependencies for the audio to work. So I installed an ALSA player, ALSA mixer GUI and Audacity, and after I'd done that and rebooted, the audio worked. So I'm not sure exactly which were the dependencies for audio that weren't working, but by doing that I grabbed them and it now works. There was no battery monitor installed on the in the software, so I went and got Batman out of the Synaptic package manager, installed that, and so now I can check the battery status, which if you're out and about and you're relying on the battery a lot, that can be quite useful to have. On the whole, given that Raspbian's been built to be compatible with all the iterations of the Pi, including the new Pi Zero, etc., the software installed by default, while minimal, includes all the basics for web use: Chromium for web browsing, Claws Email for sending emails and receiving emails, and for office work, you've got the full OpenOffice suite, which is quite a feat. And I did a little bit of playing around with these and they work fine. You've got to remember that the X61S is a Core 2 Duo and I had 4GB of RAM, so I would expect them to work fairly well. but on something a little less well-specced, you might find that some of the more resource-heavy packages might slow down a bit, and you might only be able to use one or possibly two at a time. So, would I use Raspbian X86 as a daily driver? Well, with a few tweaks, it might be possible, particularly on if you've got an older PC or laptop that you want to try and rescue. On something very low spec, you might struggle. I need to try it on an old Atom netbook to see if it will work, or but I suspect on a Pentium 4 system, which I might try out at the Makerspace in the next week or so, because we've got one kicking around for adding distros to, and if it's got a couple of gig of RAM, it should work reasonably well. And if you've got one or two of them kicking around and a couple of kids at home that want a homework system and somewhere that they can mess about with software development through Scratch or Python or whatever, some of the stuff that they do at school may be on Raspberry Pis and they've not got a Pi, then it could be quite a good little student, school student machine. And you're not throwing something away to have to be recycled. Granted, a Pentium 4, it's going to be more hungry on electricity than a modern system, but take into account how much it's going to cost you to replace that system, and you can probably run a Pentium 4 for quite a number of years before your electricity costs are going to eat into 300 or 400 quid that it costs you to replace a Pentium 4. I've put a link in the show notes to a page on the internet that gives you a link to download the ISO either via HTTP or a torrent, and give it a go, see what you think of it yourselves and let me know. So that's it. That's Tony Hughes in Blackpool signing off for this episode of Hacker Public Radio. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.